I'm Angela Ross, and this is SoCal Voices. The killing of George Floyd by a former police officer focused the world's attention on the problem of police abuse and misconduct in ways that few other cases have. In the U.S., the murder of Floyd renewed calls for police reform or to abolish policing as we know it. Maintain the status quo, they say, and policing will continue to cause more harm than good. Others worry that dismantling the police will lead to anarchy. What can be done in the realm of public safety so that everyone is, in fact, safe? Filmmaker Matthew Solomon addresses that question in his documentary, Reimagining Safety. Matthew Solomon, welcome to SoCal Voices. Great to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm very, very excited to talk to you today. Thanks.
You didn't initially set out to make a documentary film when you came up with Reimagining Safety. Mm-hmm. I'd like for you to talk about the series of events that led to you actually doing the film, because you were actually on another path before that all started, weren't you?
Yeah. I've been on a few paths. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles in West Hollywood. So I love that this is SoCal Voices, because, you know, this is home to me. But, you know, growing up in LA, I went to very diverse, integrated schools. And so at a very young age, you know, my friends were everybody, all races, religions, sexual orientations. And at an early age as a white male, I was very aware that my friends, especially my Black friends, had different experiences than I did, not just with the police, but, you know, when we would go to the mall and stuff like that. And then, you know, when we started driving, like, I was always a designated driver, and I didn't realize why at first, but it's, you know, because I was least likely to get pulled over. And, you know, and then after high school, I went to University of Southern California. I was a music student there, but I was really interested in sociology and anthropology, and I was taking those courses. This was the early 90s, and I was learning about systemic racism at the same time as the Rodney King beating and the LA riots, and then later on the, you know, O.J. Simpson trial and Rampart scandal. And so, like, all of these significant cultural events that kind of sent me on the social justice path, and I was always aware of that. I was a professional musician for years. I got into filmmaking, writing and directing scripted projects. And along the way, I was trained in conflict resolution, and I've always been passionate about people and relationships and communication. And so before the pandemic, I was doing conflict resolution and traveling all over, providing services and facilitating for universities and corporations. And then the pandemic started, and we couldn't go anywhere. And I decided to go back to school. And I was in a master's program in public administration. And then the George Floyd murder happened, and the, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests. And, you know, all of this was happening at the same time I'm back in school.
Right.
And so I was, you know, doing all of my coursework in public administration, which is sustainability and policy and transformative leadership. And I was applying all of that to the issues with policing and incarceration, and became very curious about what are the alternatives. You know, like, if something happens, who do we call if we don't call the police? And so, you know, I was coming to the end of the program, and one of my academic advisors, when it was time to do my thesis, was like, "We know you know how to write a paper, but we also know you're a filmmaker. Why don't you do something creative, you know, like a documentary or something?" And I laughed, because I was like, "I'm a filmmaker. If I do it, it's a lot of work. I'm going to make a movie. It's not just going to be a video."
Yeah, you're like, "Dude, what are you talking about? Wow."
Yeah, I was like, "I can write a paper in a weekend. You know, you're talking about making a film." And she said, "Well, do it anyway." And that was just like the dare that I needed. And so I did. I found 10 people. I wanted a variety of points of view, not just activists. So, you know, the district attorney of LA County, George Gascon, is in the film. Jodi Armour, who's a professor at USC. Nikki Black is a sociologist from Inglewood. Hadia Kennedy is a former LAPD officer. I found, you know, 10 people, conducted interviews, filmed it on my iPhone, edited on my laptop, put it all together, submitted it, got an A. But then I showed it to some people. We did a test screening at Jodi Armour's house, and people were like, we need people to see this. This is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, I did the extra work to fine tune the edit and do the graphics and get the music and everything mixed properly. And we started screening. And to date, as of today, we've done 37 community impact screenings across the United States. Over 60 organizations have hosted screenings. And, you know, we were endorsed by the Black Panther Party of Washington State, who's made the film part of their curriculum, which when I got that call, my jaw hit the floor. So it's been really incredible. And I'm really proud of the fact that the film is a resource and people are in the movement are using it to say, okay, you want to know about, like, watch this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you've got a lot of very positive response from folks in the community, folks who are in the social justice work. And that is fantastic. I wonder about the people in your personal network and others, maybe just on the periphery of your professional network. What was their response to you when they found out you were A, going back to school, and then B, you were doing this documentary?
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, for the most part, people have been very supportive, you know, and especially my friends who have known me, you know, for a long time, and they've seen me go, you know, through these different phases and careers and all of that. And everybody's been really supportive, you know, and there's some folks who, you know, unfortunately, in 2020, in response to COVID, and then in response to Black Lives Matter and things that I was posting, you know, because I lost several people to COVID. I lost my uncle, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic.
So sorry.
Thank you. And, you know, there were a lot of people who were like, oh, it's a conspiracy. It's this, it's that. That's not really why your uncle did. You know, so dealing with that and then posting in support of Black Lives Matter, you know, there were friends of mine who dropped out, who didn't want to hear it, you know, would push back or, you know, would just like disappear, you know? So like that 2020, 2021, I was pretty much losing friends, you know, like every month, every week for sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of people found out how folks were aligned during that period. And you're certainly not alone in that regard. A number of people lost friends, got into it with family. A very interesting period for our country and facing some of the stuff that has happened in our history. You know, you mentioned that you did the film using your iPhone and editing on your computer. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about your process when you decided to move forward with the film. How did you pull it all together, both the human resources and the other resources you needed to begin production?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just did, I've always been like very DIY, do it yourself. When I was in music, it was before digital, you know, so like my friend and I,
you're a person of a certain age,
51 in March, I'll be 51.
Okay.
So, you know, we were, instead of paying for studio time, I was in a band and we were like, let's just record it on a 4-track, which was this, you know, cassette recorder 4-track where you'd have to like record things and then bounce it down and bounce it, you know, this whole process. But we did it and we put out an album and it was awesome. I self-published a book about the Me Too movement in 2018. And, it's just like, I can rely on myself to make it happen. Getting funding has never been a superpower of mine. You know, maybe that will change. So, you know, with my phone, I knew I had an iPhone 8 and I was like, I know I need to upgrade this. And so I had a free upgrade and I went to the 13 and I was able to film in 4K. I have experience editing. I've directed films, you know, as scripted films, like horror films and comedies and things like that. So I knew what needed to be done and I knew how to set up lights. I borrowed a lavalier mic and an audio recorder from a friend of mine. And I just, showed up one man band with a couple lights and, you know, I rented a second camera, a second iPhone so that I could have the A and B cameras. And I just did it, you know, and I had to research how to process all the footage and was able to edit on my laptop and then, you know, the stuff that I couldn't do, I'm connected. Like Stephen Yeaman, who is a very talented audio mixer and composer. You know, we've worked together before. So he did the mix and a lot of the sound design and some of the music. And, you know, we just made it work. And then, honestly, one of my dear friends from junior high, Donna Hajikani, who came on as an executive producer, you know, she was able to help out with some of the places where we needed funding. Cause there are some things you just can't get for free, you know? Yeah. And so we made it work.
That's fantastic. You know, you mentioned earlier that you have a range of people and perspectives represented in the film. These are folks from law enforcement to social justice activists. Was there a particular perspective that surprised you or caused you to rethink any of your own beliefs or perspectives?
Not any particular person, but what really moved me, not knowing much about abolition going into this film, is that abolition, alternatives to policing and incarceration, all of that is rooted in love and care for one another based on our humanity. And you know, it's not just let's get rid of the police. And that's not really even what abolition is about. Abolition is a you know, it's a mindset, it's a way of life, it's a way of viewing, you know, our fellow, you know, citizens, and it involves removing harm and systems of harm. And so, you know, that was the thing that I took away that really aligned with my beliefs anyway, but I didn't know that was such a big part of it going in.
Were there any times during the production of the film that you stopped and said, whoa, I'm not sure what I'm doing? Not from the standpoint of your desire to do it or your technical knowledge, but did you ever hit a wall where you thought, gee, I'm not really sure how to approach this or to pursue this? And what was the turnaround for you? How did you break through that wall?
I mean, honestly, I don't recall hitting that wall. I'm pretty resourceful, and I'm always like, if I get stuck, I know I'll figure it out. You know, there's the how do you structure? Because I hadn't done a documentary before, and it's funny. I was telling somebody earlier that I reached out to some documentary filmmaker friends because I was like, I just wanted to get some advice on how do you structure this thing, and none of them got back to me for various reasons. So I ended up just diving in, and I approached it, you know, so going back to music, like as a songwriter and producer, you know, songs have to do a certain thing. They got to catch you at the beginning. They got to, like, you know, lift you up, and then it kind of backs off a little bit, and then it gets exciting again. And, you know, so you hit these beats, and that's the same way that I approach screenwriting, you know, but there was no script for this. So what I ended up doing was, you know, transcribing all of the interviews and having the key points and then blocking it out, outlining it. Like, what do I knew I wanted to structure it in such a way that, like, here's the problem, here's why it persists, and then here are the alternatives. And that goes back to, like, conflict resolution. If you're living in a world of something new is possible, like, you have to get really clear about why it's not working and why, what the impact is if we don't change it before you go into, like, these are the changes of the alternative. So, you know, that was my process. And, you know, luckily it all came together.
Has your experience doing this documentary changed you in any way, especially thinking about all of the history that you have in terms of your different careers and your different skill sets, the talents that you have, in terms of what you want to do going forward? Did you have an idea, I'm going to be doing this at this point in my life, and now you're not doing that because of this?
I mean, when I went into the master's program, it's the first time in my life that I didn't know what was on the other side. I knew I wanted to be in school. I knew I wanted to learn what there was to learn. I knew I wanted to learn from the people I was learning from. And I told my department chair, my academic, I was like, I don't know what's on the other end. I assumed it would be something in politics or government or policy making or something. I thought that I was done with the entertainment business. And then with the film coming about and me traveling and doing 37 screenings you know, in the last year. And then there's more lined up. I'm meeting all of these incredible people who are doing amazing work in their communities. And it's so that part sort has started to restore my faith in humanity. Cause after 2020, like, you know, losing friends and all of that, like, I was like, wow, we're in worse shape than I thought. I was always very, you know, positive about people, and that got rocked. But this journey the last year has, you know, kind of put me back on course to the point where I want to do more. You know, I want to explore through documentary work, like, you know, what, not just with police, but through an abolitionist framework, how would we approach other social challenges if we really cared about people? Because if we care, we do things differently. So how would we approach climate and education and government and relationships and, you know, all of our other social challenges? So that's where my interests are now. And, you know, being 50, almost 51, you know, it's like, we got work to do. So I don't have time to mess around. And, you know, it seems like this is the spot that I need to be in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. The clock's ticking. So you gotta, no time to waste. You gotta get busy doing what you gotta do. That's great that you have that sense of purpose and renewal actually in humanity, and that you see the path for yourself to help make things better in our world. There is such a strong need for that. You know, we want people to watch the film. But I do want to ask you about some of the interviews that you did, in the documentary and your ideal sense of what the world would look like if some of the policies and positions that were advocated for in the film actually happened. What does that look like for you, Matthew?
I mean, it looks like people having their needs met, people being treated with dignity and respect. You know, one of the big things that was revealed in 2020 and keeps happening, right? You know, if you look at even what's happening with Palestine and everything, people are so quick to dehumanize one another. And if you spend any time on the Nextdoor app, you know, you see that regarding anything, you know, unhoused people, you know, anyone, it's like, oh, well, you know, those people basically, you know, it's like they don't deserve help or support or whatever. And it, so it looks like a world where people actually care and take care of each other. And there's not that judgment and that, differentiation between who deserves to be safe and have their needs met and who doesn't. And if somebody does, you know, do harm, there would be systems in place and people in place to help that person and, you know, provide them with whatever they needed to actually become a community member that contributes, versus what we do now, where we just, you know, throw them in a cage and then the cycle of violence gets perpetuated and it just gets worse. And all of that has been shown to not make a difference in keeping us safe. But what statistically has been shown to make a difference is when people have their needs met and have resources and have access to, you know, mental health and, you know, physical health, like, you know, medicine and food and housing, like that. It's, you know, when you don't have to worry about that stuff, it really frees you up, you know, and then, you know, we can really cohabitate much better.
Yeah. And those are all such huge issues for us in SoCal and beyond. The housing issue, so much of the economic disparity, a lot of that feeds into some of the stuff that we're dealing with on the negative side that causes people to engage with the police in the first place. And then they arrive on the scene and then things, not all the time, but too often deteriorate into something that ends up being harmful. People seem to be so resistant to change. There is a group of people, obviously you've talked to them, they're in your circle, they're in your film, who want to see some movement, want to see some change, but we really are up against this hard wall of resistance in terms of maintaining the status quo because it's the only thing that works. I just wonder, how do you think we can move to break that down, and how quickly can we get there?
Yeah, that's the question. You know, I think with having my faith in people restored somewhat, I think at our core, you know, we all just want to be safe. We want to feel connected. We want to feel part of a community, generally speaking. And so the systems that are in place prevent that. And so I think the more that people have access and are educated to the what's possible, the more likely they are to you know, be open to new possibilities. You know, with my film, you know, there are some people that I know, and people who have been to screenings who, you know, consider themselves, you know, liberals, and are like, yeah, the, you know, defund the police scares me. But then they see the film, they're like, oh, I get it now. This makes sense, you know? And so I think it's just a matter of, you know, educating people, making them more aware, and appealing to that part of them that wants to connect with humanity. Now, you know, we're up against politicians and media and things, and, you know, corporations and billionaires who don't want that. And there's a, you know, there a lot of people are making money off of police and prisons and homelessness. You know, Gina Viola, who's in the film, she ran for mayor of City of Los Angeles on an abolitionist platform. And, you know, she was like, homelessness is a policy choice because, you know, it's something people can run on. It's something that makes money for certain people. Developers come in, you know. So I guess it comes down to, you know, inspiring people to make the choice of, you know, people over profits, and getting that when we choose people, it actually makes us safer than choosing profits and then retreating to, you know, barricading ourselves in our homes and that sort of thing. As far as how fast, I don't know. You know, honestly, this year with the election and everything I imagine is going to be happening the next few months, it's a really pivotal time. And so it's either, we'll either perpetuate the status quo longer, things are going to break down, or, you know, I'm hoping people wake up and we choose differently. But I don't know how it's going to go, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. No, none of us knows. One of my concerns is that this nation will implode from within, but there is so much dysfunction within our own society, and people outside of America can see the dysfunction and they leverage it for their purposes. And there is a risk that if folks don't stand up, that destruction, that dismantling will come from within our own borders if we don't make some changes in our society. Before I release you to the rest of your day, Matthew, I do want to talk to you a little bit more about books and about music. I always like to ask folks, what's the last thing you read, or what is something that you want to read that you are interested in?
Well, I'm in a PhD program now, so I'm reading a lot. I'm reading a lot.
You are drowning in books right now.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I didn't read a book for years. And then the last 3 years I've made up for it. There's an amazing book called Healing Justice Lineages.
Mm.
Kara Page. I forget the name of the other author. It's a really amazing book. It came out in 2023, and it talks about social justice and racial justice movements, but the importance of healing trauma and the importance of community. And it's such a beautiful book. Like, I was reading it and I was like, oh man, I'm so happy I'm reading this book right now. And then I've shared it with some folks who were like, oh, I read that book. It's amazing. So Healing Justice Lineages.
Love that. Love that. And then, what's your go-to music when you're just trying to chill?
Oh, well, there's a lot, but I listen to a lot of Rage Against the Machine. Soundgarden is my favorite band. Public Enemy, Tribe Called Quest. I'm a '90s guy, so you know, '90s rock and hip hop is pretty much my go-to.
Well, Matthew, if folks want to learn more about you, where should they go online to get in touch with you and learn more about the film?
Yeah, thank you. The best place is reimaginingsafetymovie.com. And, you know, there's links to our social media, which it's all Reimagining Safety Movie. But you can email me through the website. If you want to host a screening, you can contact me there. We're going to have a streaming release coming up within, hopefully within the next month. I'm waiting on those dates, but that's coming soon. And then we're planning, if you're in Los Angeles, we're planning to do a premiere at some point, hopefully in March. So, reimaginingsafetymovie.com. You can check out the website, see where we're going, and, you know, send me an email.
Matthew, you're a man of many talents. Just a pleasure to chat with you. And thank you for your work, the great work you did on this film. And I'm glad it's having some positive impact out there in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Support for SoCal Voices ensures we can continue to bring you quality content. There are several ways you can support the podcast. You can visit the Perks section of my fan page for lots of fun options to support the show. Visit the SoCal Voices website to make a financial contribution or get some SoCal Voices merch. If you're a business or company interested in sponsoring SoCal Voices episodes, reach out to me directly. Links in the show notes. Thanks.